From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 7th day of January 2014. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson at L&M Commodities. He's in Newmarket, Indiana. Harry Cooney from GrowMark in Bloomington will be here to help us look at the agricultural energies. We'll discuss the weather forecast with Don Day out of Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. And along the way today, we'll take a closer look at the Affordable Care Act and its impact on the self-employed. In our case, farmers. And it all happens right here on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. It comes to you from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. For over 96 years, generations of farmers have turned to Farm Credit for their financial needs. Whether a young farmer or a seasoned grower, Farm Credit offers products and service geared specifically to the agricultural community.
Let's check now the numbers as they finished up in Chicago at the CME Group for this Tuesday afternoon. March corn at 426, settled down a penny and three quarters. May at 433 and three quarters, down 2 cents. And July at 440 and a half, down two. December of next year at 453 and a quarter, down 2 cents. And the March of 2015 at 463, down 2 cents. Wheat futures finished the March at 602 and a half, and the soft red down three and a quarter. July at 611 and a half, down two and three quarters. The hard red July at 644 and three quarters, up a quarter of a cent. Now the soy complex, January beans, $12.99 and a half, up two and three quarters. March futures, although, were down three quarters of a cent at $12.76. May futures, $12.58 and three quarters, down two and three quarters. July at $12.47 and a half, down three and a half. And November beans at $11.16 and three quarters, down nine and a quarter. Bean meal futures at $4.34.60, up $5.80. Bean oil at $37.70, that finished down 17 cents. Live cattle futures, the February contract $136.52.5 for 100 pounds, down 30 cents. April at $136.35. That's down 57 and a half on the day. The settlement price in the January feeder cattle at $168 and a nickel, up 2.5 cents. The March was down 27 and a half at $167.82 and a half. And lean hogs at $85.52 and a half were $1.10 lower. You, of course, are listening to Illinois Public Media. You can always find us, ag programming, online at willag.org. There you'll find all of our daily agricultural programming. If you check our Outlook calendar, you'll find the schedule of events we've got going on. A couple of things that were canceled this week include the two corn and soybean classics, Monday and Tuesday. They have been rescheduled. You can visit our website to find out more in the Outlook meeting schedule over on the right-hand side of the page at willag.org. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. February crude oil for the day, $93.81 a barrel, up 38 cents. The wholesale price of gasoline, or RBOB, up 3 2/10 of a cent a gallon. That's at $2.67 8/10. And ethanol futures trading $1.93 even, up 6 1/10 of a cent. The difference between the two, or the spread now, is at 74 8/10 of a cent wide. That's 2 6/10 of a cent wider than it was yesterday. And natural gas at $4.30 3/10 is down 2 1/10 of a cent. Diesel fuel trading $2.96 2/10 of a cent, up 2 4/10 of a cent, and gold futures on the afternoon at $1,229.60 finished $8.40 lower. The U.S. dollar trading 80.83 is now 0.181 higher for the afternoon. Let's check in on the weather forecast as it comes from the National Weather Service for the Urbana-Champaign area. For this afternoon, outside our studios, by the way, it is just 7 degrees at the moment, and we have a 2 mile an hour wind, so it's not too bad, and the wind chill is down to 2 degrees as well. Looking at the forecast, it says this afternoon we'll see skies for the day, mostly cloudy, with a high of 7, wind chill values between negative and 8 and negative 13. We should have winds that gust all the way to 20 miles an hour. Tonight, mostly cloudy and a low of 7. Wind chill values between negative 1 and negative 9. And south winds at 7 to 13. Wednesday, a 20% chance of snowfall after 7 in the morning. Cloudy and a high near 22 degrees. Wind chill values between 0 and 10. Southwest winds at 6 miles an hour. And Wednesday evening, cloudy with a low of 15. Wind chills between 5 and 10. Hey, finally above zero. That's a nice turn of events. Thursday, a 50% chance of snow. After 7 a.m., cloudy and a high near 30. More on the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of the half hour here on WILL.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Let's check now what's been happening in the marketplace. On the phone line with us, Wayne Nelson at L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. Wayne, I take it you've been trying to stay warm there in Indiana.
Hey, it's just as cold over here as it is in Champaign, I'll tell you. It's been quite a few days here, and we've actually got a snow emergency over here. My secretary was told to get off the roads by the deputy this afternoon. But not much cash movement going on.
No, I would think not much cash movement at all. I can't imagine too many people wanting to get out, but I can imagine end users needing corn. Has basis popped up at all?
Yeah, the basis is real good, especially for some fast shipment here towards the end of the week when they might be able to get out. So it is a little bit tempting to some, but I'll tell you what, most of the guys staying pretty close to the vest, not knowing what it's going to be like. Hard to get machinery started, and it's really rough on machinery to start in this kind of weather.
It's tempting, and it's more dangerous, I suppose, relatively speaking, with an end-of-the-week USDA final crop production and grain stocks report due out on Friday morning at 11 a.m. Central Time.
Yeah, you know, that's why we're seeing a real choppy week here. You know, one of the things we are looking at that might add a little oomph to the corn market is the index fund rebalancing is probably started and supposed to come into real effect starting tomorrow. Looks like by the estimations of what they say they're going to do, there should be 93,000 contracts of corn that should be bought sometime by the index funds to rebalance. So that could add a little oomph back to this corn market.
Yeah, and that usually happens between the 5th and the 9th day of the month, right?
Yes.
So if they haven't started yet, they don't have too many days left to manage it, I would think.
Yeah, but like I say, that's one of the things that they think that could add just a little bit of oomph back in there. But everybody's being very close to the vest as far as all that's going. You know, we're looking for the carry out and the corn to go back to where it was in November. You know, we were a little lower in December than we were in November, and it looks like about a 186 on the corn carryout.
Does it tell you anything about what producers ought to be doing with old or new crop corn?
Well, I think that, you know, a lot of the guys looking at it, when we do get these tight basis levels and whatever here now, why it's not a bad idea to just let go of it and maybe buy some calls to protect for down the road for two reasons. Number one, this corn crop's not storing as well. It didn't dry down as good. If you tried using just air, and also, you know, we just think that it's going to be time to move a little bit before the majority of farmers think that's the idea to do it.
Anything to talk about in the soybean complex?
The soybeans, you know, we're back close to $13 on the board here, and with the basis levels like that, not some bad places to maybe let, if you did store beans, let a few beans go there too. But most of the farmers were pretty aggressive selling beans in the fall.
There's quite a discount to the new crop for November, and it continues to drop. Any reason to consider that, or shall we just wait that one out?
Well, I think we're going to wait it out, but this close under 1120 is not a good thing.
Anything else for the livestock producer for the day?
Hey, you know, the livestock numbers staying good. This kind of weather always makes livestock go on up, and it, every livestock producer out there knows he's earning his money or is deserved to get paid for it, taking care of livestock in these conditions.
Absolutely. We wish the very best for them and hope they stay safe as they try to service their livestock. Thanks much, Wayne.
Thanks, Todd.
Wayne Nelson is with L&M Commodities. He's in New Market, Indiana. And he joins us here on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. You can always hear him again at willag.org. That's willag.org. Wayne, also part of our Voices of Illinois Agriculture event. That's to be held the 24th day of January. If you haven't signed up yet, visit our website again, and you can find all the details. The keynote address will be given by the president of the University of Illinois, Bob Easter. That is the 24th day of January for willag.org and U of I Extension's Voices of Illinois Agriculture.
In agricultural news, the Senate yesterday confirmed Janet Yellen to head the Federal Reserve, setting her up to take office on February the 1st. The Senate confirmed Yellen, a longtime Fed official and economist at the University of California at Berkeley, by a 56-26 vote. Supporting her were all 45 voting Democrats and 11 Republicans, while all opposing votes came from the GOP. Many senators missed the vote because frigid weather canceled numerous airline flights. Yellen comes to the post after a career in which he has focused in part on unemployment and its causes. Yellen will have to decide when and how to ease off short-term interest rates, which the Fed has kept near zero since December of 2008. Last month, the Fed said the low rates will continue well past when unemployment rates fall to 6.5%. Unemployment was 7% in November, and many economists believe that the low interest rates will last until at least late 2015. Farm Futures says that U.S. farmers plan a major shift to soybeans in 2014. Farm Futures says producers are ready to slash corn seedings, the 92.23 million acres, down 3.7% from the total USDA estimated in November and 5.3% less than originally planned by growers in 2013 before cold, wet weather prevented many fields from being planted. Farmers indicated they want to put in 82.34 million acres of beans in 2014. That's up 7.6% over 2013 and easily would be a record. Farm Futures surveyed more than 1,600 farmers by email during December. USDA releases its prospective planting's estimates on March 31st. USDA has opened the 45-day comment period on deregulating one corn variety and two soybean varieties resistant to 2,4-D. On Friday, APHIS released a 204-page draft environmental impact statement report on the impacts of deregulating the seeds. The report says that the seeds themselves would not pose a plant risk, but increased use of 2,4-D could mean more weeds would be resistant to that herbicide in the future. APHIS stated markets for 2,4-D corn and soybean seeds would be strongest in southern states and fringes of the Corn Belt. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report, Commodity Week, and this week's Corn and Soybean Classic Series, the one from yesterday and on Monday were both canceled, but they've been rescheduled. The iHotel event will now be on January the 28th, and the Holiday Inn event, which was due in Mount Vernon, will be on January the 21st. Other things that will be happening in the month of January include the 24th of January, our Voices of Illinois Agriculture event. If you have not signed up for it and you'd like to come, the president of the University of Illinois, Bob Easter, will keynote. You can simply call us at 217-333-7300 for all the details, and they'll help you find the right place to get your reservation made, or you can go online at willag.org. That's willag.org. Either place, go online at willag.org or just call WILL and ask about Voices of Illinois Agriculture. Now, up next, you know the time has come for the nation to sign up for health care through the U.S. government offered insurance plans. The self-employed, like most farmers, will need to go online to one of the health care exchanges, probably. We'll hear more details in a moment. It is now mandatory, with some exceptions, for citizens of the United States to carry health insurance. Those in the nation's workforce covered by plans offered through their employers are probably all good, but others have some decisions to make, says Mark Lovell from the University of Illinois.
The folks that are going to have the most difficulty are the ones that have to go to the exchange to get coverage for themselves in order to fulfill that individual mandate, which is the requirement effective 1 January 2014, requiring everybody to have coverage in place for themselves that meets those minimum requirements or face a potential penalty when they file their return.
More on the penalty in a moment. Let's first deal with who needs to sign up using healthcare exchanges. Those that already have a healthcare plan, one not offered through an employer, but rather purchased from an insurance company, may need to sign up. Then again, maybe not, says Mark Lovell.
There are some plans that will have grandfathered status. The Affordable Care Act has a whole section on grandfathered plans. It's good to check with your insurance carrier to determine and confirm that the plan does qualify for grandfathered status. If it does, the real key are the record-keeping requirements, the grandfathered plans that are able to be maintained moving forward are going to have some pretty rigorous record-keeping requirements.
This, thinks Lovell, is because the plans will be phased, pushed out of the system over time. So today, the health care insurance some individuals already have may qualify again. Check with the insurance agent. However, it appears most self-employed folks will need to go to one of the health care exchanges, key in all kinds of information, personal, and then start the sign-up process. There are 9 exceptions to this rule.
For example, if they can't obtain affordable coverage, and what that means under the Affordable Care Act, if they're going to be required to spend more than 8% of their household income, that's generally income of everybody in the household, including perhaps older children that work, if they have to spend more than 8% of that household income amount for coverage, they may qualify for an exemption. There is also an exemption for hardship. There are a number of different grounds. And again, as they get into that website, there should be a place for them to apply for any number of these exemptions that they think they may qualify for, including the hardship one.
The website should guide folks through the process of whether or not they must sign up and if they're eligible for any assistance. The insurance plans are set up mostly in a tiered bronze, silver, and gold set of coverage levels.
What's available on the exchange, and most exchanges being set up are going to have a setup where you have a choice of bronze, silver, or gold coverage. So it's being divided into these 3 different areas, perhaps other ones too that may be available because the insurance companies have some flexibility as to how to offer coverage over the exchange. But it's being made in those types of categories in order to make it easy for the consumer to know what it is they're getting. But all the coverage that you would obtain through the exchange will meet those certain requirements, minimum essential coverage. And generally, in a nutshell, what that means is you can't have something like chronic illness coverage or accidental coverage, you know, some sort of limited coverage, because that's not going to meet those requirements. You can certainly buy that in addition to minimum essential coverage if you wish. That's an option that's available. But anything over the exchange is going to meet those requirements. Insurance companies know what those requirements are, and they're going to market insurance that meets those requirements because they don't want a backlash from someone that purchases coverage from them that later finds out that it did not meet those requirements and that they're subject to a penalty.
That's a penalty for having health insurance, which does not meet minimum specified requirements. There are also penalties for simply not signing up for the government's health care insurance program.
The mandate does become effective on 1 January. The penalties for 2014, if you don't have coverage, is the generally there's an amount, this $95 amount that everybody's been talking about, and it's $95 per person in the household that should have had coverage but didn't. If it's someone under 18, it'd be half that amount, so it'd be $47.50, or 1% of your income minus a certain filing threshold amount. It's really the greater of those two. So, I mean, it's not just the $95. So you could be on the hook for a pretty substantial penalty.
That $95 amount, by the way, goes up each year. It will be $325 per person in 2015 and $695 per person in 2016. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and drydown data, is at AgriGold.com.
Well, you're listening, of course, to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is a Tuesday afternoon. On the phone line to check out the agricultural energies now, and we need as many energies as we can possibly get at this point to keep warm, is Harry Cooney. He's at GrowMark in Bloomington, Illinois. Harry, thanks so much for being with us.
Well, good afternoon, Todd. I thought you were probably laughing, kind of wondering if I was actually there or not, because when you called, I was on another line, so fortunately, I was here.
No, I'm able to check and see whether you're actually there or not.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you're up with technology. Hey, we had some exciting action here as we ended last year in the energy complex where the markets took off and rallied. They called it the Santa Claus rally following the stock market higher. In fact, gasoline and diesel fuel prices rallied about 20 cents a gallon right up into about Christmas or a couple days after Christmas. And then since then have almost almost lost all of that value back out here now. So this is giving the end users that need to have some coverage out into 2014 another opportunity, just like they had in mid-December there on that low. So the charts are suggesting that this is not too bad a time to start layering some purchases in for the calendar year.
And what are you telling producers to do in that case?
Well, talk to their local FS member cooperative in the first place and see what programs they offer for forward contracting. But definitely take a look at the spring and the fall diesel fuel needs and possibly even some summer gasoline needs, and realizing though that their gasoline needs are probably not that high. But especially over in the diesel fuel needs, looking at spring and fall diesel fuel needs, but also look to fill their inventories here at this time of the year before what normally occurs is a seasonal rally in price on out to late spring and sometimes even out to early summer. Last year, I think the seasonal rally stopped at about mid-spring in there. It peaked out a little early, but from now on, you tend to have a rally out into the coming months, so that's why we look to fill inventories, especially on diesel fuel, and then look to do some contracting in both products.
So are you of the mind that liquid fuels in general are trying to bottom, or just the diesel fuel?
No, both. Liquid fuels, gasoline and diesel fuel, both of them looking to bottom here at this time of the year. Typically, there will be some type of a January thaw in price, and that's just kind of what we've seen here this week, even though it came real fast. Sometimes it doesn't come till mid-month. People say, well, are you sure it can't go down more? We're never sure of that. I mean, anytime anybody tells you about the markets and they say, hey, I'm sure this is exactly what's going to happen, you know they're pulling your leg because nobody knows exactly. But this market is sold off. The chart indicators are turning to be more into the buy mode here now. So this is an opportunity. It's kind of like a tornado watch. Conditions are favorable for a bottom to be put in place. That doesn't mean for sure it's going to happen, but conditions are favorable for doing some buying at these levels.
And so the seasonal price studies would suggest that this is the place to bottom to or not?
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. Usually the bottom comes more in December, but really we're right back down to the level in many cases that we saw back in mid-December. So this is giving us an opportunity now to reload or add some or start buying if we didn't do any back in December. So this is the opportunity that we're being given. Prices for contract values are really not a lot different than they have been other years, but we also know that diesel fuel demand is fairly strong, and we're exporting a lot of diesel fuel overseas to other countries. One of the countries in particular is the country of Chile in South America. Another country of choice is the Netherlands over in Europe. So we're exporting fuel in addition to our strong domestic demand.
Thank you so much for taking the time with us.
Thank you, Todd.
That is Harry Cooney. He's with GrowMark out of Bloomington, Illinois. He joins us on this Tuesday afternoon to take a look at the agricultural energy markets. In just a couple of minutes, I'll be back. We'll talk about the weather forecast with Don Day at Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated, headquartered in Lafayette, Indiana, with branches in Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois, providing independent commodity, financial, and currency analysis to its clients and newsletter subscribers. On the web at myrmconline.com.
It's National Tempura Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1608, a fire destroyed Jamestown, Virginia, leaving colonists little protection from the winter elements. Later that year, a severe drought, what became known as the Starving Time, killed 154 of the colony's 214 people. In 1784, the first U.S. seed business was established by David Landreth in Philadelphia. In 1827, Sir Sanford Fleming was born. A Scottish surveyor While in charge of the initial survey for the Canadian Pacific Railroad, the first Canadian railway to span the continent, he realized the problems of coordinating such a long railway. That led him to the idea of time zones, which led to the adoption of the present system of time zones and earned him the title of Father of Standard Time. In 1830, the Maryland-based Baltimore and Ohio Railway, one of the oldest railroads in the U.S., officially began service. On that first day of operation, the passengers were not transported by a locomotive, but rather pulled by horse-drawn carts on the new track. In 1958, ant farms went on sale for the first time. And in 1970, Max Gasker, whose farm in upstate New York played host to the original Woodstock Festival, was sued for $35,000 in property damages by neighboring farmers. And that's this day in agricultural history.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on this Tuesday afternoon. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. On the phone line, Don Day at Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Good afternoon to you, Don. Thanks for being with us. It's been cold, but I guess we're going to finally get to a warming trend here pretty shortly. Can you tell me about it?
Yeah, and when we have an outbreak like this, it's so intense that the air behind it is going to feel warmer, and it will be. Most of the lower 48, beginning especially tomorrow and heading into the second half of the week, we'll see the jet stream flatten out a bit and more of a Pacific influence will come on in. So some relief from the severe cold is coming. It may be fleeting, but we are going to get a bit of a break.
Oh, I didn't like that word, fleeting. What do you mean? What happens after it comes through?
Well, we're in a pattern right now that appears that the ability for at least one more, maybe two, Arctic shots are going to be able to come into the middle section of the country. We see an active weather pattern. While it's not going to be bitterly cold, we see several quick-moving systems bringing some opportunities of rain and snow to the Midwest and Corn Belt. And then between the 15th and the 20th of January, especially around that 18th through the 20th, we're fairly confident there's going to be another release of some very cold air. Now, is it going to be as intense as what we just had? Probably not. But it's still likely going to be of Arctic origin. And we haven't even talked about what February may bring. And indications suggest that February, the door to the Arctic is going to be open. So I don't think this is one and done. I think we're probably looking at more cold episodes this winter in the Midwest.
How did that door get propped so wide open this year as opposed to other years?
Well, a real big difference between where we are now and where we are a year ago is it seems far away. And it seems that it wouldn't make a big difference. But the water temperatures off the west coast of Canada up through the Gulf of Alaska last winter were colder than normal, which caused an area of low pressure in western Canada, which in turn caused a big area of high pressure over the U.S. for most of the winter last season. And that shut the door. This winter, the water temperatures in the Gulf of Alaska are warmer than normal. So it's flipped. So instead of low pressure over the Gulf of Alaska, it's high pressure, which in turn causes a trough to form in the nation's midsection during the winter months, and that basically leaves the door open to the Arctic and Siberia. And it's a pattern that's stubborn, and quite honestly, there's nothing to really break it, at least break it down completely until we're probably out of February.
When we get years like this, when this happens, do we usually not only get the cold, but do we get more snow than usual?
Well, we can. And, you know, every time we get these systems come in and put snow on the ground, and there's a lot of it on the ground, that in turn takes the next set of air masses a little bit more energy to melt that snow to really warm us up. And so if we don't have enough time to come on in and melt a lot of this precipitation that's on the ground, well, that in turn can make the next waves colder. It can also keep it pretty active. It really does look like snow amounts this winter are going to be above average for, I would say, all of the Midwest.
I haven't left you much time to talk about South America. They have been, well, just plain old hot in Argentina.
Yeah, and the trend there is still very warm. Maybe not as warm as it's been in the last week, but right now Argentina is the hot, dry part of South America. Brazil, not nearly as hot. And I do see a little bit of rain for both countries, but the trend of warmer than normal and drier than normal, especially Argentina, is going to continue.
Thank you so much. We appreciate you taking the time with us.
Stay warm.
Don Day is with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report for this Tuesday afternoon. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason.